you very much. Andy and I not only share a commitment to the NHS, but a passion for football, although we are from different sides of the park. So, to use a football expression, from the election, Andy has the opportunity to play the ball, and that will be to repeal the Health and Social Care Act of 2012. And for an Evertonian, that will be an amazing achievement. From the other side of the park, in terms of the Liverpudlian, it's my task very much to blindside Paul Burstow, the Lib Dem architect of the Health and Social Care Act, to oust him from Sutton and Sheen, to bring about change in Sutton and Sheen, and also to extend and take part in the new developments for Labour around the NHS. Paul Burstow has been complicit in the Tory assault on the NHS, and it's my task with my team to bring about change within the constituency. So we have very different tasks, but as Merseysiders, we will be seeking to bring about a united front with our fellow candidates across the country to reform the National Health Service. My commitment, as I said earlier, to the NHS is built on personal experience, the kind of real-life experience I believe that people want from their politicians. Eye operation after eye operation at Liverpool's Alder Hey Hospital, Children's Hospital, psychiatric support for my depression and gender dysphoria in adult life are key features of where I get much of my experience, indeed enduring commitment to health and social care services. But I also rely on digital hearing aids and other interventions in terms of health and social care as a disabled person. And I think that real life experience as a patient, as a service user, brings something, some added value to the table in my contributions. It also enables me to contribute as a politician locally and at times nationally. So those experiences, I think, are important, and others will bring different kinds of experiences to the table too on behalf of Labour. My personal story, of course, has been quite newsworthy of late, following my decision to come out as a transgender woman. And I'm grateful for many of the kind comments on social media and in the media generally that have been expressed. Experience of the kinds of experience that I have brought because of the resilience that I've had to capture in terms of challenging issues around social justice and participation, not only as a disabled person, but also going through a gender transition, I think can bring value to our party's agenda. Most of my experience has been positive in the health service, even though some of the outcomes have proven rather challenging personally. I have found that NHS staff bring many skills and much commitment to their roles. Although they, of course, are pressed and resources far too frequently. That kind of situation leads to poor patient experience on occasions, and also sometimes to abuse and neglect. So it's Labour's responsibility going forward with the next government to ensure that fundamental standards as described by Francis are observed. The tabloids and the Tories alike, complain about human rights with very spurious claims about protecting criminals and the like. And it's our task, I think, our challenge to change that narrative, to explain how human rights need to safeguard vulnerable people from neglect and abuse. Your aunt or your grandmother, your child, people in your family on a day-to-day basis. We have seen examples where people have been let down by the system. Labour needs to use the various instruments in terms of human rights to prevent another mid-Staffordshire or winter review that saw older patients and people with learning disabilities neglected and abused, and with devastating consequences. People deserve dignity in our NHS and social care system. Integrating health and social care is central to the success of the next Labour government, and as Andy has already explained, and it is a pledge that must be underpinned by human rights, and that means giving people the tools to live in the community, adequate resourced home care, for example, and individual packages of support. Whole person care, as it's often described, is about effective coordinated care and not about coalition efficiency savings. We have very different approaches. We may not, for example, be able to revive the independent learning living fund as it is currently structured. Yet, it is essential, it is our responsibility in the next Labour government to find ways for people to live independently in their community. No return under Labour to institutional care of the past. Despite improvements in medicine and technology, health inequalities, however, continue to widen. It is only Labour that will intervene to tackle poverty and the consequential poor health outcomes that we see across the country, and in particular pockets, especially in some urban areas. We know there is strong association between low socioeconomic status and poorer groups. And we also know that men and women in the highest socioeconomic groups can expect to live up to 7 years longer than those in lower groups. Long-term unemployed people have the highest rates of reported poor health. We also know, in terms of particular groups in society, some ethnic minority groups, for example, have worse general health than the white British majority, particularly people of Bangladeshi and Pakistani origin. Evidence also shows that gay, transgender, gypsies and travellers, and asylum seekers are all more likely to experience poor mental health. Many groups, particularly disadvantaged groups and those who are vulnerable, find it difficult to access health and social care services in the standard way. There isn't sufficient flexibility in the system. I believe there's a compelling and compassionate case for advancing through the next Labour government a response that is strategic to health inequalities, pulling together different areas of government to tackle systematic problems. And that's something I'm going to say something about in terms of different groups in a moment. But I think the key thing is that it needs ministerial leadership and commitment from NHS England to work creatively, think outside the box, and not to be so process-driven. So, for example, I'm a trustee of Community Network, which is a national charity that basically, in a quite innovative way, seeks to combat loneliness experienced by older and disabled people through telephone communities and social media. And the isolation experienced by many of our beneficiaries lead to poorer health outcomes, not least with mental health. We heard earlier tonight about some of the issues of younger people in terms of mental health. But it's also a strong theme amongst disabled people and older people, particularly those who are isolated. There are both patient and cost benefits to be derived, in my view, from breaking people's sense of loneliness and lack of direct support. So tackling the A&E crisis, for example, isn't just about keeping units open or building even more of them. It's also about finding innovative solutions that bring people together, that are about early interventions that support people, that bring in different kinds of services and connect people so they have shared interests with others, that they can alleviate the pressures that they may feel, as well as having the benefit of alleviating other statutory services that they may draw on because of their sense of loneliness. The Coalition keeps telling us about work-shy disabled people scrounging on benefits and dependent on public services. Yet, I know, campaigning as a disability rights movement for longer than I care to remember, over 3 decades, that we as disabled people do want to work, because we also want to improve our health outcomes, the prospects for our families and our friends, and to participate in the community. But the reality is that there are significant systemic barriers in the labour market that block the route for many disabled people. My experience running RNIB's employment service in the 1990s across the UK showed me very clearly that it isn't just about recruitment advertising, publicity initiatives, about being positive about disability and all that kind of stuff. But it is also about dealing with situations as they arise. And most disabled people experience the onset of disability during their working life. But unfortunately, they often, far too often, lose their job as a consequence. And therefore, to work strategically through the next Labour government and the programmes that we set up, I think it is important that health practitioners work with, in a proactive way, with job centres, with employers, with unions, and with people themselves to find pragmatic solutions to individual circumstances. Retention is a powerful tool in combating avoidable implications of disability, not least in terms of the intertwining factors of depression and isolation that then lead to other health inequalities experienced by disabled people. Only Labour will change this. I am, of course, as you'll know from little publicity recently, also interested particularly in the commissioning of the 7 gender identity clinics in the UK by NHS England's specialised services. This is quite a specialised service and a very limited resource. And these clinics provide treatments and refer service users back to their GP under particular guidance for hormone treatment, for example. As the number of transgender people, however, seeking medical care is rising by 20% a year in the adult population, the waiting lists are becoming unmanageable. So we have a situation where people wait 12 to 18 months to go to a clinic. Then they need to go through a real life experience for 2 years. And then they have to wait for surgery. those who want to go down that route, which will now take at least another 18 months. So clearly there is a capacity problem in the system that needs to be addressed. But it isn't just about supplying more clinics and professionals. Instead, it's also about finding new ways of working to develop the knowledge and competence, for example, of GPs so that they are better equipped to address the clinical needs of their transgender patients locally, especially with hormone treatment. So only a small number of people, perhaps, who need more significant intervention supported by a specialist clinic. And therefore, the model needs to change in a significant way. And so that those clinics also act as centres of excellence to support GPs and other practitioners in the system. I hope my kind of experience and those organisations I work with will help Labour to bring about change in health outcomes, both in terms of the gender pathway, but also general health outcomes for people with a transsexual background as we go forward. My work, and I think it is very much that Labour are the only party that are able to deliver. My work, as you know, for some years was the Disability Rights Commission and then as head of policy with the Equality and Human Rights Commission, and that's quite a different story for another occasion. But one of the pieces of work I did was, a couple of pieces of work was around gypsies and travellers and the inequalities they face. And the work that I undertook identified that the shortage of secure accommodation is the linchpin to all the other inequalities that this group encounters, not least in terms of health. So services, in my view, need to be, yes, culturally aware, working alongside community leaders. But also, I think it's important, no matter what kind of model we might shape in terms of delivering health services to this group, that the systemic problem in terms of the accommodation challenge faced by gypsies and travellers is tackled. If that doesn't happen, then no amount of different kinds of health service models are going to work in terms of improving health outcomes. It is essential that the accommodation needs are addressed, and that means working across government, health, local government, and other departments in order to bring about an integrated solution, which can be quite simple, an integrated solution for gypsies and travellers who are amongst the most disadvantaged people in society in Britain today. Responding to the need of efficiency savings overall from in terms of the need for investment is of course critical, and Andy says something about the 10-year plan. We've seen recently, of course, the Stevens 5-year plan, which Labour has rightly supported. But I think we need to recognise, hopefully in the 10-year plan when we see it, and certainly through the 5-year plan, that this needs to provide an opportunity for the Labour Party to tackle the challenges of human rights and health inequalities. It can't just be about another £3 billion top-down reorganisation, but about fundamentally how NHS services work and how they relate to people in local communities, not just in hospitals, but also out there in our boroughs, in our wards, on a day-to-day basis. That, I think, entails, as I've said already, person-centred care with service users afforded the dignity and respect. As we say in the disability movement, nothing about us without us. And that's why I want to see the next Labour government appoint a high-level patient champion his independent and authoritative advocate would challenge and hold up the mirror to both government and the NHS England, and indeed to the wider system of regulators and providers. That not only requires change, but also would demonstrate political courage. And I believe Labour is the only party that can deliver and will deliver that kind of change. As in many places around the country, the NHS is under threat. It is in Sutton, both in terms of St Helier Hospital locally, having previously been threatened with closures of A&E and maternity services, but still under threat. Young Minds and talked earlier, for example, about pressures on services for young people. And in South West London, we have recently had a consultation which will see inpatient support cut by 10% across South West London if the proposals go ahead. So there are real challenges both in South West London, in Sutton, and around the country. And Labour is the party that will meet those challenges from the 8th of May of this year in terms of investing to bring about a prosperous future for our National Health Service. In concluding, I just want to reflect on some things I said about 6 weeks ago at the Labour Party's regional conference when I spoke in support of a motion about the strategic direction of NHS in the capital to deliver integrated health and social care. And I said that was very much about raising clinical standards with patients at the heart of their own care, as I have done tonight. But I think alongside Stephen's review and what the Labour Party already proposed in a plethora of policies, we also need to take account of the Lord Darcy report on better health agenda to maximise the £22.5 billion NHS budget for the capital. I think this has the potential to lead to a positive strategic response to the health needs of the capital. Darcy Health Commission recommended that a health commissioner should be appointed alongside a strategic board for London that must have responsibility for three things which I think are essential. Firstly, shaping and coordinating public health and care, ensuring long-term development and cultural change, not more reorganisation that we have from this broken government. Secondly, bringing physical, mental and social care together, as the Labour Party has already proposed, brokering, therefore, collaboration, as Andy mentioned earlier, across disciplines, boroughs and sectors, so no more fragmentation that we have experienced from this discredited coalition. Thirdly, engaging with the public effectively and holding the system to account. And that's about no more Tory bureaucracy or Lib Dem excuses. It's about finding solutions and also being courageous in our approach, such as, for example, a patient's champion, as I have suggested this evening. So, in drawing to a close, I just want to say that these are the kinds of issues that mean that I believe, and I think the wider Labour movement and trade union believe, that we are set in the next 4 months to bring about significant change across the United Kingdom. That we, and only Labour, has the vision for the capital and across the country for an agenda that will bring about substantial reform, that will defend our NHS, but will change it to meet modern needs. It is Labour that has the ambition that we can only deliver by the 8th of May and beyond through both Edmund and Bath, but also next year the London Mayor and Assembly here in the capital. And working across constituencies with friendly societies and socialist societies like the Socialist Health Association, I hope to play my small part in bringing about that kind of change, to bring about vision that ensures that disabled people, transgender people, and people from different ethnic minorities and groups are part of contributing to work, have better health outcomes, and can support their families and friends in a way that everybody else can do. So that's the kind of vision I want to see us bring about, and I'd like to thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, but no Rod Little style ones, please.